Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, stream our show at nprnews.org/listen live every weekday at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Glad you're listening today. For the next two Tuesdays, we're going to talk about voting in a pandemic. Next week, what young voters want and how this pandemic may change that. New research from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. This hour is what we saw in Wisconsin earlier this month, a template for a national election in a pandemic.
The lines here at Marshall High School have only gotten longer throughout the day.
Voters and poll workers covered themselves with face masks and gloves. Some wore plexiglass shields over their eyes.
So many poll workers refused to work that about 2,500 members of the National Guard deployed to staff polling sites.
We only have 5 polling places in the city, and I've been out here for almost 2 hours.
Showing you a shot of these long lines of cars here. Curbside voting is available for those with disabilities or coronavirus symptoms.
What should Congress and state leaders be doing to prepare for voters who still hesitate to congregate at polling places, for Americans who may have never used mail-in ballots before, and for state and county infrastructures that aren't ready for the demand? As our guest joins us, I'm interested in what you're most concerned about when it comes to voting in November. Are you worried that your vote may not count in the general election? Are you worried that you may not have access to the polls? Are you worried that there will be fewer polling places in November with high demand? Think about that. Join the conversation here. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter. At Carrie NPR, Ari Berman is with us. He's a journalist who covers voting rights, and he's the author of a book called Give Us the Ballot. And he's with us today. Ari, where are you? I know you're outside of New York City.
Hey, Carrie. Good to talk to you. I am in the Hudson Valley of New York.
Okay. We should say there's a little bit of a delay on the line, so we'll cope with that. But I'm really glad to have you with us today. Thanks for the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Some of the statistics that have emerged from the Wisconsin primary are pretty troubling. Thousands of voters who requested absentee ballots didn't get them. There were thousands of ballots that were apparently lost on their way to the post office. I don't think we've got a definitive idea of what happened there. And as we heard, polling places in a city the size of Milwaukee shrunk down to more than half, easily more than half, of the usual available places to vote. I'm curious about what you observed in Wisconsin that raises some concerns for the general election.
Yeah, Carrie, if Wisconsin is a precursor to November, I think there's a lot of concerns about how the election will play out nationally, because thousands of ballots were rejected in Wisconsin for a lot of different reasons. Thousands of people didn't get their ballots to begin with that they requested, and then many other ballots were thrown out because they didn't meet the requirements that were needed, or they didn't arrive in time, and there was a lot of confusion. And in-person voting was down significantly. It was much more difficult to vote in person. Milwaukee went, for example, from 180 polling places to just 5. So you saw those now iconic images of people waiting in very long lines. And so it was kind of a template for how not to hold an election in a pandemic, but it's the only template we have right now, so people are studying it very closely.
We should acknowledge that Governor Evers, a Democrat, was late to announcing that he thought that the primary date should be moved. I mean, there have been questions and some analysis that say that had he been more decisive earlier, now whether the state legislature would have gone along with this who knows? But had he pushed for this much earlier, some of these infrastructure problems that we saw in Wisconsin may not have occurred. What's your read on that?
I definitely think that Governor Evers should have pushed earlier to delay the election, like governors in other states did. But he didn't have the power to unilaterally change the election date. That had to be done by the state legislature. And I don't think the Republican-controlled legislature was going to listen to Evers because they have a very contentious relationship. And I think Republicans were operating from the premise that low voter turnout was going to help them politically to win a state Supreme Court race. Now, that actually didn't happen. In fact, the opposite happened. Turnout was strong by mail in places like Madison and Milwaukee, and actually turnout plunged in more conservative parts of the state. So the bet that Republicans made there didn't actually pay off. But I think they were operating from the assumption that in-person voting would be okay for them and that their voters would learn how to vote by mail. And if anyone was going to be affected by low turnout, it was going to be the Democrats. So I think that the election date wasn't changed for political reasons, not public health reasons, because it's very clear from a public health perspective, Wisconsin was the only state out of 10 states that had primaries scheduled in April not to delay their primary.
Yeah, let me take some calls here to Ray in Minneapolis. Hi, Ray. Hey, Ray, are you there? Okay.
I am.
Oh,
how
good,
are you?
Good. Hi. Good to have you on the line. You're a member of the state legislature, am I right?
I am. I chair the subcommittee on elections in the House of Representatives.
Glad to have you calling. Glad you were listening. How are you thinking about this?
Well, you know, this is something that, you know, there's a lot of concern on what November might look like. I think that what just took place in Wisconsin is a good example. And now we're hearing reports of several individuals that believe they actually caught the coronavirus in the process of actually voting. So it's really, really important that we figure out a way to keep our, you know, election safe. And that's not just for voters. That's also for the 30,000 poll workers that work in the polls in Minnesota on election day. So we're working really, really hard in the House. I would say that there's some resistance by the GOP to move to mail balloting and having mail ballots sent out to all registered voters mm-hmm. in Minnesota. So we're trying to figure out other ways to try to reduce the number of people that would actually show up at the polls on election day.
So and, Representative, it sounds like, and Governor Evers wanted to do this, but he was stopped. But it sounds like you're saying your preference would be just, even if there are not requests from Minnesota households to send out a mail-in ballot. Is that right? Are you there? Okay, that call might have dropped. Ari, that is something that Governor Evers wanted to do, right? At one point is to send out ballots to every household in Wisconsin, whether they were requested or not. And he was stopped from doing that. Why?
Yes. Well, the Republican-controlled legislature did not want to mail a ballot to every registered voter. They said that it would open the door to fraud. However, that is the gold standard that states that vote entirely by mail, like Oregon and Washington do. They mail a ballot to every registered voter. And that is the only way to ensure that people are not disenfranchised. Because if you put the onus on the voter to request an absentee ballot, some people will be able to do so, but some people won't be able to do so. And certainly thousands of people are going to fall through the cracks. So really the only way to make sure that the election is accessible to everyone is to mail a ballot to every voter. And that's been something that both Republicans and Democrats have advocated for in the states that vote largely by mail.
Yeah, because we should say that Republicans have a pretty significant cohort of voters, many of them elderly, who want to vote by mail, maybe particularly in the midst of a pandemic. Now, why is it that most people can or many people cannot request a mail-in ballot? Does it have something to do with internet accessibility or what?
It depends on the state. The laws for voting by mail vary a lot by the state. So in five states, there's near universal voting by mail. In 30 states, you can request an absentee ballot for any reason. And in 15 states, you have to have an excuse to request an absentee ballot. So it might be that you live in a state that you don't meet the excuse for why you need an absentee ballot. Or it might be that there's requirements along with the absentee ballot. Like in Wisconsin, for example, you had to have a witness signature on your ballot. Well, if people are social distancing, they might not be able to get a witness signature. You had to upload a copy of your government-issued ID in Wisconsin because they have a voter ID law. Well, people might not have had that ID, or they might not have known how to upload it. There were stories of seniors taking selfies of themselves instead of uploading their IDs, so their ballots weren't counted. People might not be able to go through the different steps. You might have to print out a form, send it back, and then have it sent back to you. Well, that's something that people who don't have a printer aren't going to be able to do. So there's lots of different reasons why someone might not be able to request an absentee ballot, or their absentee ballot might not count. And that's the problem with voting by mail, is the laws vary so dramatically from state to state that I think a lot of people are confused on what the requirements are in their state.
Renee says on Twitter, my polling place is a retirement home, and we're in the midst of a pandemic that disproportionately kills the elderly. Ari Berman is with us this morning. If you've just gotten in on the show, these are two conversations this Tuesday and next Tuesday about voting in the midst of a pandemic. Today, we're talking about taking note on what happened in Wisconsin with the limited number of polling places, the mess with the absentee ballots being requested. Many didn't make it to the people that requested them. Many didn't make it through the post office for some reason. What can we understand from what happened in Wisconsin to propose changes and calls for preparing for a national election in the pandemic? What did we observe? What kinds of infrastructure changes should be prepared for now? Where's the resistance coming from? Ari's a journalist. He's the author of Give Us the Ballot. And we're talking to him from his home, and there's a bit of a delay. So if you're noticing that, that's what's going on. 651-227-6000. I want to hear from you if what you are most concerned about when it comes to voting. If you have some experience with the Wisconsin primary, I know we have a pretty big contingent of Wisconsin listeners, would love to hear about your experience with that. Are you worried that your vote may not count in November? You worried about getting to the polls? Have you ever, you know, not voted by mail, and so this seems a little intimidating? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter at Carrie and Piarda. Lori in River Falls, Wisconsin. Hi, Lori. What was your experience like?
Good morning. Both my husband and I received, or we requested a ballot through the link that we received. Mm-hmm. He received his ballot, and I actually received two in the mail. And so I sent only one back. It's the primary. I'm not that concerned. But right, come election time, when I really want my candidate to win, who's to say if I sent in both ballots, would both get counted?
Right. So you're trying to figure out, why'd you get two absentee ballots? Are you confident that your absentee ballot made it back and was counted?
We mailed it back. My husband took them to the post office, and they assured that they would go directly to the to our township, that they would not be routed through the city and then come back to our township. So I think that they got there in time. But I guess I'm concerned more so the fact that I received two.
Yeah.
And I only requested one. And during when the upcoming election, if they do this again, would both ballots be counted?
Right. I understand your concern. Ari, I think that's just part of the confusion that was going on. What else did you observe about this mail-in infrastructure that really went wrong in Wisconsin?
Well, what I observed was that a lot of people requested ballots and didn't get them. There were 135 ballots, absentee ballot requests, 135,000 absentee ballot requests that for some reason or another weren't sent back.
Wow.
We don't know if they weren't sent back because people decided not to vote, or more likely they never got their ballots. I think it's probably the latter, because I think if you went through all the trouble of requesting absentee ballot, you probably were pretty certain to vote. And so we still don't know exactly why all of these people, a lot of people, 135,000 people, didn't get the ballots that they requested or didn't send them back. And this election in Wisconsin, the state Supreme Court election in particular, but the primary also, it wasn't a close election. So we aren't really scrutinizing things. But if it was an election that was 5,000 votes or 3,000 votes, or you have elections in Minnesota quite famously that were a few hundred votes,
yeah,
people would be really, really scrutinizing this data and saying, we had thousands of ballots not received. We have thousands of ballots thrown out. We had thousands of ballots that didn't meet one requirement or another. And I think people would be very angry that their votes weren't counted because mail ballots are more likely to be thrown out than in-person ballots. And I think that mail voting is the best option in the pandemic, but we shouldn't just pretend that we can go to all mail voting and all of the election problems will just suddenly disappear.
Yeah, let's hear from another voter in Wisconsin, to Devin in Bay City, Wisconsin. Hi, Devin. What was your experience like?
Well, hi. This year was the first year I voted absentee ballot. I'm a truck driver, so you know, sometimes I'm away from home, so you don't have a choice.
Yep.
And so our local village clerk posted on their Facebook and their other social media outlets, if you need to, an absentee ballot, this is where you go. This is where you sign up. It was very simple. I used to be a very tech savvy person, but not as much as I'm getting older.
Uh-huh.
But it was easy to upload my, my photo. And my girlfriend that lives with me, she did the second verification. That went pretty smooth. And instead of putting them in the mail, you know, it's a small community, so it's easier in the small communities versus the larger communities. We actually hand delivered them instead of putting them in the mail.
I think that's interesting because we're hearing from other people who felt like it was just safer to hand deliver. Devin, why? I mean, you trust the post office, I assume.
I do, but I live literally three blocks from the village clerk's office.
I see.
So I could have walked down there, but the thing about it is, like, you go, the mail system, if we wanted to send out a letter, it would take 2, 3, sometimes 4 days for that letter to get there.
Okay.
And like, recently, they've increased their, you know, it might be a day or two. It's a lot quicker. Well, I'm not putting any blame on the post office, but it's quicker than it used to be. So, you know, people are maybe not leaving enough time to put that in the mail. It's not the post carrier's fault. It's the person putting it in the mail.
Yeah.
Maybe there is problems with the post office. I don't know.
Well,
that's why I hand delivered. So I knew it was going to get there.
Devin, really good to have your call. Well done, by the way, to do that for the first time. But I ask about the post office because, Ari, I'm seeing some questions and some tweets here about people that are concerned about the, for lack of a better word, objectivity of the post office. And John tweets, if Trump were to privatize the post office, he'd exert very strong indirect control over any voting by mail. Now, he would have to get through Congress to do that. But are these some of the kind of concerns that you see popping up in this highly polarized landscape we're in?
The concern that I'm hearing, Carrie, is that the post office has a major funding shortfall.
Got
and it needs likely billions of dollars. And so if the post office doesn't get that money, the post office might not be able to function efficiently. And the only way to hold an all-mail election is with the post office. And so it's kind of this chicken and egg thing that if the post office isn't funded, you can't do vote by mail. And so I think people are very, very concerned about this. National leaders, people like Elizabeth Warren, other people have called for a rapid injection of funds for the post office because they've been hit hard by this pandemic, just like everyone else. And they're going to be more critical than nearly anyone in this election. And there's always problems with the mail, just in general. I mean, it's not a perfect system. But if they're operating at very reduced capacity, it's going to be very hard for them to handle an unprecedented number of mail ballots.
I wanted to ask you about the infrastructure that's required for many, many more mail-in ballots. I mean, we saw Wisconsin take, 5 or 6 days to count. What would have to happen in some of these larger states to be able to handle a massive increase of mail-in ballots in a general election?
You would need to radically transform the election system. You would need many, many more people to count the ballots. You would need more time to count ballots. You would need new equipment to count ballots. And that's why people are so concerned now, because it's April.
Right.
And if we don't start doing these things now, if we don't start making changes in April, May, June, it's not like you can just open a polling place in October. Voting by mail takes a long time to get put in effect. And states that have perfected this, like Oregon and Washington, they've been doing it for two decades. And so the worry here is that if states do this in kind of a haphazard way, and they say, well, we need to just change a few things, but not a lot of things, then they're not going to be prepared at all for the amount of ballots that come in. And voters aren't going to be prepared to navigate the system. And I think so one reason why so many people didn't get the ballots they requested in Wisconsin was because election officials were just absolutely overwhelmed. And they're dealing with the same issues that you and I are dealing with. Issues worrying about their health and watching their kids and trying to do their jobs in very difficult circumstances, and also often having to do it around other people at a time of social distancing. So election officials are under a tremendous amount of stress right now. And in Wisconsin, voter turnout was about 34%, I think I saw, for this April election. So you have to imagine voter turnout is going to be at least double that. So whatever the test run in Wisconsin was, it was a much smaller electorate than the electorate that we're going to be seeing in November in pretty much every state.
Robin says on Twitter, can we please be honest about what's behind the resistance to universal vote by mail? Republicans know that they will not win elections if more people vote, especially poor people, young people, and people of color. So they want to make it as hard as possible. Robin, I don't know if the numbers, the data really backs that up. Ari, there is some competing analysis about who may be able to access the polls among Republican voters if there was more mail-in balloting available to them. Do you think this is a firm conclusion that Republicans don't want this because they believe that they're not going to win elections? And does the data back it up?
I think that some Republicans believe that, but I don't think the data backs that up. We've seen a lot of studies on mail voting, and it doesn't benefit one party versus the other. There are a lot of elderly voters that tend to lean Republican that traditionally vote by mail. And Republicans in states like Florida, for example, have put a tremendous amount of effort in making sure that their voters can vote by mail. So traditionally, mail voting has been something that's been pushed a lot by Republicans. And if you look at the states that vote by mail right now, some of them, like Oregon, are more liberal, but some of them, like Utah, are more conservative. Mm. And one of the biggest proponents of vote by mail is the Secretary of State of Washington, who is a Republican. So I don't think there is any clear partisan advantage to voting by mail. I think this is just something we should be doing in a pandemic. It's the number one recommendation of the CDC in terms of how to vote in the pandemic. It makes sense. If you can't leave your home, the safest option is to vote by mail. But I don't think it's clear-cut at all that this is going to benefit Republicans or benefit Democrats. And I think there's been a lot of rhetoric about this, but not a lot of data to back it up.
Yeah, President Trump is clearly one of those Republicans who believes that if you allow people, more Americans, to vote by mail, it will not produce good things for Republican elections. Listen to this.
The things they had in there were crazy. They had things, levels of voting that if you ever agreed to it, you'd never have a Republican elected in this country again. They had things in there about, election days and what you do and all sorts of clawbacks. And they had things that were just totally crazy.
That was President Trump on Fox and Friends talking about a bill where Democrats were pushing for more vote by mail. And the president clearly believes that more voting by mail means not good things for Republican candidates. Let me grab a call here from Arlene in Cook County, Minnesota. Hi, Arlene.
Hi. Yeah, in Cook County, we vote by mail, and to me, that's a blessing. I am a senior citizen, and as most people know, Cook County is pretty much majority seniors. The ballot comes in the mail. I sit down. I fill it out. It has to be witnessed. Whoever comes to my door that day is my witness. It gets back in the mail the same day.
Wow.
Now,
efficient.
If I had to go to the courthouse and vote, that would be a 40-mile trip. The other problem we have is getting people to work in the polling booths. And this way, I don't know how they got it set up, but it works perfect. And I can't see why the whole state should be involved. I would think it would be better to leave each county vote the way they want to.
All right, Arlene.
If they want to do mail-in ballots for their county, leave them. And don't make it a law that everybody has to do the same thing. I think that's ridiculous.
Arlene, I appreciate the benefit of your experience today. Sounds like you're very efficient getting that ballot filled out and sent back in to Tom here in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Hi, Carrie. Yeah. I tell you, I've been on the board for 44 years in Perryville Township here, and in the last several years, the state of Minnesota has allowed us to go into the mail ballot, and we have citizens that come to the annual meeting that are 90, 95 years old, and they think it's the best thing ever. So as far as participation, I agree with the gal that just called in.
Mm-hmm.
Participation is 95% in our township. It always was 80s or above, but it's really been, and it's not a political issue for as I look at it. I've been a clerk, so I handle the elections. I think it's a matter of, it's a process that works, and I think some people are scared of it. That's about it.
Tom, I appreciate, your experience, too, being involved in this. Ari, I'm curious about what you think of Arlene's suggestion there at the end with individual counties should be able to make this decision themselves. That seems like an issue if you're trying to get the infrastructure in place for a big response and mail-in ballots. What do you think?
Well, I actually think that the rules should be set statewide, because I think it will lead to a lot of voter confusion if there's one system in one county and one system in another. And usually there are statewide trainings that take place where election officials are trained on a statewide basis. So I think it would be very confusing if in one place you had one law and then 20 or 30 miles away you had a totally different law. I understand the appeal of letting counties decide, but this is going to be an extraordinary election and there's going to be an extraordinary amount of confusion in terms of voting. And if every county had the same law and there was consistent enforcement of that law statewide, that would help people understand what the rules are. One of the big things that we saw in Wisconsin was that people were confused because the laws kept changing.
Right.
The law, when was the primary going to be? How soon did you need to get your absentee ballot back? People thought they had a week to return their absentee ballot. Then the Supreme Court said, no, it had to come back by election day, or had to be postmarked by election day. Well, then the post office didn't postmark the ballot, so people didn't know if they could count, even if they were sent in on election day. So this kind of thing happening at the last minute is extremely confusing for voters. So I think one of the lessons from Wisconsin has to be, have some consensus on the law well ahead of time. If it's a bad law, hopefully people can understand what they need to do to get around it. And if it's a good law, give people time so that they can understand it and that you can try to get voter participation as high as possible. But changing the rules so close to election day is going to be very confusing for people. And I just worry that having it be county by county will lead to less efficiency and more confusion, not more consistency and less confusion.
Bree says on Twitter, my parents live in Osceola, Wisconsin. Their ballots did not arrive until after the deadline to send them in. So they requested absentee ballots and they didn't get there until the deadline. They didn't vote for the first time ever. And a call here from David in St. Paul. Hi, David. Question about Wisconsin. Is that right?
Yeah, I have a question. Well, just in the general, because we don't have a true right to vote in this country, you know, did that court settlement or the Supreme Court, did that set a precedent that, let's say we have the coronavirus pandemic, maybe we have a second wave in the mm-hmm. summer and fall, mm-hmm. did that court precedent set us, did that set a precedent that people to be forced to vote regardless of whether or not, you know, it's safe or not, because they were forced to in Wisconsin. And I saw a spike in cases in Wisconsin.
It's a
that
good,
potentially might have been related to that.
So. Yeah, it's a good question. Like, how should we interpret what Wisconsin did, Ari, given that we're only, I don't know, 5 months away from an election?
The question was, how should we interpret the Supreme Court's decision about Wisconsin?
Yes. I mean, he's asking, does Wisconsin set a precedent that other states will try to follow?
Well, I don't think it sets a precedent in terms of forcing people to vote, because every other state has moved back their primaries so far. So I think other states are trying to make voting as safe as possible. Now, we have a situation in November where this is the election date and it can only be changed by the Congress. And so there would have to be an extraordinary situation to change the date of the election. In terms of the Supreme Court decision about Wisconsin, the justices who said that voters should not have more time to return their ballots, the five conservatives, we don't know who wrote the opinion because there was no name on it, they were very clear that this did not apply to other circumstances and that this did not apply to the general situation of elections in the age of coronavirus. Now, the liberals on the court, particularly Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who wrote a dissent, were very worried that the Wisconsin decision would lead to mass voter disenfranchisement. And it certainly was clear that thousands of ballots were thrown out because they were arrived too late or were sent back too late. But the concern about the court is that they treated what happened in Wisconsin as an ordinary situation, as an ordinary election dispute, when it was really an extraordinary election dispute, an extraordinary situation, and that there's going to be a lot of lawsuits coming before the Supreme Court about the rules of mail voting in the fall. And if the court takes a very rigid position that you can't modify election laws in a pandemic, I think that's going to lead to a lot of people not being able to vote in November.
Ari Berman covers voting rights as a journalist and is the author of Give Us the Ballot. We asked if he'd spend the hour with us today and take note of what happened in Wisconsin with a lot of calls for putting infrastructure and putting laws into place that allow more Americans to vote by mail, trying to resolve some of the issues that came up in Wisconsin. We're asking him where we are in that, what this means for the November election. And of course, I'm asking you this hour about what you're most concerned about, given what we saw in Wisconsin, given we know some of the moves in other states to discourage people from voting. That's one of the things I want to ask Ari on the other side of news about voter registration work and some of these rather onerous laws that apply to voter registration. So we'll talk about that. More of your calls and questions. 651-227-6000. Anywhere in the upper Midwest, 800-242-2828. And on Twitter, it's at Kerry, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. Ari Berman with us on voting. Ari, before we go back to the calls here, I want to ask you about voter registration, because I know Wisconsin's Democratic Party did some pretty innovative things to try to get people registered when they couldn't go door to door. How could voter registration work online using some pretty accessible portals? And would there have to be some law changes to permit that?
Well, in some states, it's really easy to vote online. In some states, they don't allow you to do it at all. And so 10 states don't allow online voter registration, including some very big states like Texas. So it's going to be very, very difficult to do voter registration in those places. Other states like Wisconsin make it a little bit easier. There are things you need to have, like a government-issued ID, to be able to register online. But you can certainly encourage people to register to vote online. And all of that is now moving towards online organizing, which means emailing, texting people, doing things like that. The worry here is that normally in a presidential election year, millions of people register to vote in person through things like get out the vote drives, or they go to big concerts in the summer, right? Or they go to big fairs, things like that, that are traditionally big gathering places in the summer. All of those things have been canceled now, and there are no in-person voter registration drives. So that means millions of people who otherwise would have registered are not going to be able to register in person this year. Certainly some of them will be able to register online, but probably not all of them. And that's another big fear, that the electorate right now is essentially frozen, that whatever the electorate was before the coronavirus, that's likely to be what the electorate is in November. And normally, there would be millions of new voters added to the electorate. So that's something that people are just going to have to work with the reality on the ground now is going to be different than maybe what a lot of groups that do voter registration had hoped.
I wanted to, the last time you were on the show, we talked at length about Georgia and some of the voter suppression efforts that go on there. Georgia has this exact signature matching on the registration applications with signatures that are on file. Will you explain what the law actually says about that and what that means in practice?
Yeah, so basically the your name and your signature on your voter registration form has to match your ballot. And it's often the same for mail-in ballots, that whatever the name and signature is on your mail-in ballot will have to match whatever it is in terms of the registration rolls. The problem in Georgia was that there was a huge discrepancy in terms of names of people that registered and the name when you cast a ballot, and that ballots were being thrown out for very minor issues. So if someone was missing a hyphen, for example, they might throw that ballot out. And so what we saw in Georgia before the 2018 election was that 53,000 people were put on a suspended registration list because their names on their voter registration form did not exactly match the names of the ballots that were the names of on the registration forms. And so that created a situation where thousands of people were confused whether or not they were actually registered to vote. And these are the kind of things that could be magnified with voting by mail, because signatures might not match exactly, names might not match exactly. And the question is, will voters through the mail have a time to actually cure these problems, or will their ballots just be thrown out? Those kind of technicalities are something that could end up leading to thousands of people not having their votes count without even knowing about it. And that's one thing I'm quite concerned about right
okay.
now.
Call here from Larry in Minneapolis. Larry, you're an election judge. Is that right?
Yes.
Good,
I'm a
good work.
Judge at a precinct in South Minneapolis, just off of Lake Street. And I have slightly different concerns. I mean, I routinely vote by mail because my precinct where I'm a judge is not my home precinct where I would normally vote. I don't have any problems with that.
Uh-huh.
But my concerns are on the people who are usually members of my election team. There are two of them that I know have disabilities. I wonder if they're going to be able to be judges. I myself have one of my adult sons lives with me. He has a suppressed immune system because of a disability. So, I'm a little, hedgy on whether or not I really should be showing up, but I plan to anyway, and then quarantine myself even in my house for 2 weeks afterwards.
But
I'm
going
to need more judges than you are. Because I'm going to need two or three judges to make sure the voters keep spaced out and stuff like that. And I'm really concerned about 2-3 hour waits in my precinct when we get in November if we have bad weather here. That's going to cause problems for the whole election system.
I think you are raising some really good questions, particularly, Ari, because we saw what happened in Wisconsin with Governor Evers having to call out the National Guard to act as polling staffing for this. How best to prepare for that, I guess, ahead of it, if we can?
Well, what the CDC is advocating is that states adopt vote by mail and also adopt extended early voting. Because if you give people more time to vote, it's much easier to social distance. In the same way that when I go to the supermarket now, they're limiting the number of people that come in. You can limit the number of people at a polling place by giving people more time to vote. But when there are fewer polling places and everyone's voting on the same day, that's a recipe for disaster, like we saw in Wisconsin. And so I hope every state will take some steps to open up early voting, because there are going to be some percentage of people that don't want to vote by mail, that want to vote in person. But having it all be done on one day is going to lead to longer lines, and it's going to lead to more health risks for both voters and election officials. And as the caller mentioned, many election officials are elderly and are at high-risk populations already. And so you're putting them at a considerable amount of risk holding the election on one day as well. And so those are the kind of best practices that the CDC is recommending. Whether states do it or not, I think is going to be a question more of politics. But in an ideal system, we would mail a ballot to every voter, and we would also give people the opportunity to vote in person over an extended period of time where they can vote safely and not endanger themselves or the poll workers.
Jordan adds on Twitter, if you could let listeners know that Minnesota voters can submit absentee ballot applications already, the online application at minvotes.org opens May 13th, but paper applications can be mailed or emailed at any time. So May 13th for the online, but if you've got an absentee ballot, you can fill it out and mail it in. Liz says on Twitter, I voted absentee for the presidential primary. I'm tech savvy, so it was okay for me, but it does require a two-step process, including going online, makes it easier to request a ballot. And to the phones to Deborah in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Deborah, sounds like you did vote in the primary.
Yes, I did, but I'm 71 years old, so I'm a shut-in right now, and I couldn't get a witness, so I was about to throw it in the garbage. But I looked up my town clerk's name in the phone book. I'm in a township, which helped, I suppose, and called her, and she actually came to my home.
Wow.
Yeah, she even offered to get groceries for me.
Oh, my gosh.
But when I first tried to vote absentee, it's like maybe 2 years ago, the League of Women Voters had a table set up in the library, which is where I use the internet. Mm-hmm. They don't have home. Four of us together, it took a good hour to figure out how to download my ID.
Jeez.
They gave up, actually. Mm-hmm. I went upstairs and got on, and I don't know how I figured it out. But I almost gave up then, too, because
so,
this wasn't working right.
I want to come back to what you said about needing a witness. Ari, how I guess, comprehensive is that in vote by mail across the country? I know Wisconsin requires it. How common is that?
A number of states require that. And that's one thing that I think I understand the reason for, to try to crack down on the potential for fraud in an ordinary situation. But that seems like the kind of thing that states should be waiving right now in a pandemic, because there were lots of stories in Wisconsin about people that were living at home by themselves that couldn't find a witness to cast their to observe them signing their ballot, or they would put someone at risk for doing that. And in Wisconsin, we have the data that 12,000 ballots were rejected for what they called insufficient certification. And that could mean a number of different things, but that could include the inability to get a witness signature. So again, I mean, if 12,000 ballots were rejected just in one fairly low turnout election in Wisconsin for these kind of requirements, you can imagine how the numbers would be much larger. And I think that's the kind of thing that, at least on a one-time basis, should be waived, because I just don't think that that's the kind of thing that makes sense in a pandemic. We're told not to be around other people, and you're saying, well, you actually have to be around someone when you vote. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
I mean, it is, especially because most people don't live in a township where the clerk will drop everything and come over to your house to do it.
Yeah, yes.
I know.
Exactly. And the point is that some people can get around this stuff, but some people won't be able to. And they'll just get so frustrated that they'll just give up. And we don't know how many people are going to do that, but people are already suffering right now. And my whole feeling is we should make the election as convenient as possible for people at a time of crisis, and not put more hurdles in front of them at a time when people are already struggling just to get through their lives right now. Voting is something that's the last thing on many people's mind right now. And so if you put additional hurdles in that, you have to send in your absentee ballot request, or you have to get a witness signature, or you have to get your ballot notarized. That's a law in Alabama, for example. Those kind of things are going to lead to a lot of people not voting.
I didn't know about that notary. I mean, I've had to have documents notarized recently. That's a hassle. I mean, to have to get your absentee ballot notarized, again, that means going out and interacting with someone.
Exactly. And so I understand there are some justifications for these kind of rules in a normal situation where people are able to move out and about and navigate with different government agencies. But right now, I don't think it makes sense. I don't think it makes sense to require a witness signature. I don't think it makes sense to have to upload your ID with your ballot. I don't think it even makes sense to say that you have to print out and send an absentee ballot request. I think the gold standard should be sending people their ballots. And second to that, you should at least mail everyone an absentee ballot request form so they can get it in person. They can understand the process and they can send it back. But that's what we're seeing. For example, Georgia is doing that right now for their primary. So there are models out there in terms of how to vote safely. But Wisconsin didn't follow many of those models.
I wanted to get Peter in Woodbury in here. Hi, Peter. Tell us about your experience. Hi.
Well, became a newly minted citizen last year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And voted in the primary. All the documents in the voter poll station were mailed to me after I filled the forms out. I have a concern that the internet or the web-based voting is fraught with potential for fraud. I like the idea of citizens voting. I like the idea of starting the voting for some of the handicapped people and the people at risk maybe earlier than the actual day of, so you can slow down the arguments for post-election results. So that'll all turn into another discussion. I don't see anything onerous in the Minnesota process, although I just heard you say getting your ballot notarized.
That was Alabama.
Every bank has a notary.
Yeah.
Sure, and every bank has a notary. And if you've got time between today and November, I don't know that how convenient do you have to make things. I mean, you've got months before the date.
Okay.
Is it not reasonable to expect people would act on it if it's important to them?
It's a good question, and I've got 2 minutes left here, Ari, so I wanted to give you a chance to answer that.
I think it's a general rule of thumb that when you make it easy to participate, like states like Minnesota do, with laws like election day registration and the ability to vote by mail, you have high voter turnout. When you make it difficult to vote, you have lower voter turnout. And I think that's true generally. And those kind of things are magnified greatly in a pandemic. So if you put up more requirements, if you put up more barriers to voting, some people will get around them, but some people won't. And particularly in a pandemic, the number of people that won't be able to navigate the system or will be too frustrated to navigate it is going to dramatically increase. And there's going to be many fewer people to help them because you're not going to have the same level of get out the vote drives. You're not going to have the same level of assistance from your church, your community group, or whoever. And so people are more on their own now than they've ever been before. And so I think that election law should reflect how people are living their lives right now, not an ideal situation in terms of when people can get out and go about their lives in a normal sort of way. So I think we're in an extraordinary situation, and we need an extraordinary response by states and by the federal government. And if what we saw in Wisconsin is a template moving forward, we have a lot of work to do between now and November to ensure that people aren't disenfranchised.
Ari, thank you much for spending the hour with us. Much appreciated for all the insight and analysis here.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Great to talk to you.
Ari Berman is a journalist. He's the author of Give Us the Ballot. And as I noted at the beginning of the conversation, this is the first of two shows about voting in a pandemic. Next Tuesday, we're talking about what young voters want and how this pandemic may change that. You know about some of the statistics. It seems like a long time ago, but during the primary, that although Bernie Sanders was counting on young voters, they did not turn out in the numbers that he needed. So new research coming out of the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, and we'll talk about it on Tuesday.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. If you'd like to hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. And thanks for listening.